A community outraged after a senior class trip in Central Florida was cut short due to this.
Pull over, pull over.
Sorry, that's actually not the one I was meaning to play. Let me. We're having button pushing issues this morning. I don't exactly know why. We're gonna have Mike Wood on here in just a second. But I wanted to play this one for you, Mike. Here, this was the incident I wanted to mention.
In Michigan, a driver with a suspended license left a judge stunned when he showed up to his virtual court hearing like this.
Mr. Harris, hello? Are you driving?
Actually, I'm pulling into my doctor's office. Actually.
He's suspended and he's just driving.
That is correct, Your Honor.
I don't even know why he would do that.
Right? Judge J. Cedric Simpson, seemingly in disbelief earlier this month during the court hearing for that driver, Corey Harris, the judge confirming multiple times that Harris did not, in fact, have a valid license. He then revoked Harris's bond and ordered him to turn himself into police that evening, leaving Harris in apparent disbelief.
So he's having the hearing over his suspended license. He's participating in the hearing on Zoom, on his phone, in his car, while he's driving to the doctor's office. This is in Michigan, where it is also, by the way, illegal to be on your phone when you're in the car. Mike Wood is here in studio with us. And you have a guest with us. Is that right?
We do. This is Mallory. She's shadowing me. She's wanting to be a PIO one day. And wanted to hang around and see how things are done. So
can we say who Mallory is? Because she's a sort of
yeah.
Her father is Ronnie Rivera, who
yes,
we
sir.
Know and love, and is a fantastic community servant, and has raised a very capable daughter who I think has a Ronnie Rivera-esque sense of self-esteem.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I take that as pride. You
yeah,
know?
Absolutely. You do. Absolutely. Okay. So, Mike.
All I can say on that is...
But the reason I wanted to ask you about this, the reason I thought this is you encounter people who drive on suspended licenses or drive without a license all the time.
Right.
Maybe it's because I'm just more of a rule follower, but I find it amazing that people have their license taken away and keep getting behind the wheel of a car, or don't have insurance and keep getting behind the wheel of a car. But this to me is, he's so oblivious that... It's like the rule doesn't even register for him that this would be a problem.
Well, what I was about to say, if you get into law enforcement and you're in it for any amount of time, like 2 weeks, nothing surprises you anymore. Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise me. That's something that we see all the time. In fact, when we began this initiative downtown with the loud music and the loud pipes, we had people driving on suspended felony, driving on suspended that are stopped for having their radio too loud or their pipes are too loud. So if you're driving on a suspended license, you probably should be the best driver on the road and do everything you can not to get the attention of the police. But fortunately for us, that's not the way it is. The pickings are easy. We're able to stop these vehicles, and we find out very quickly that they don't have a driver's license.
I remember doing ride-alongs thinking that same exact thing. You know, we'd park somewhere and watch a four-way stop to see what happens. And you always find people who don't, and then you think it's appropriate, you pull them over, and then, you know, they're carrying drugs. And you're like, if you're engaged in crime, you should be best behavior. But again, if they were rational, they wouldn't be in the situation to begin with, right?
Exactly.
So I found that an amazing story and couldn't make sense of it and thought I'd give you a chance to talk about it. You mentioned the code enforcement with the off-duty police officers hired by the Downtown Improvement Board to enforce the noise ordinance, which has always been illegal, but we're putting extra ears on that particular problem right now. Last time we talked, we had a few dozen citations. A couple of, you found people that had felony warrants. You found people that were driving on suspended licenses. You find a bunch of stuff when you pull people over for these other violations. How has it been going since then?
It's been going good. I think we're up to about 60 citations right now.
Okay.
We'll be going through that again this weekend. And we need to remember that it's not just a weekend situation downtown. The officers all over the city are going to be enforcing these laws.
Very good. Also, wanted to ask you, and we haven't had too many any incidents. I think we've been fairly quiet in the city.
It has been.
Which I know y'all don't like that word because you're all super superstitious.
Uneventful.
Uneventful. low newsworthiness.
Yes.
Incidents. Okay, so fair enough. We'll take that to heart. But I did want to ask you, you're training somebody to be a PIO, or Mallory is going through the process of learning to be a PIO?
Right.
Okay. And this is a role, which obviously we have you on all the time, and we talk to a lot of public information officers, but particularly for the police, this is a role that has changed. You know, there was a time when the view by law enforcement was, don't talk to the media, don't talk to anybody. You will tell you when we're ready to tell you.
Right.
Right? That kind of thick blue line, I think, between, you know, communications and media transparency, which has been changing maybe a little slowly over the years, but has definitely changed substantially even over the last decade.
Yeah, it has. And when I did this the first time in a city called Hopkinsville, Kentucky, it was the Nashville market covered us. We were a very busy police department. And I knew that when something happened, I had a couple hours to put a news release together. And I knew when the media's deadlines were. I would get them the information and plenty of time for them to put the story together and have it ready for their on-the-hour news or, in the case of TV, 4, 5, 6, 10, so on. But on one day, and that was January 15th of 2009, changed everything about how news is gathered and disseminated. And there was a man named Janice Crumbs that was on a ferry in the Hudson River, riding across the river, when all of a sudden a plane dropped out of the sky and landed in the river. And he grabbed his phone and he started taking pictures and putting them on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He beat all the major networks to that story. That picture took off. Mm-hmm. And nothing has been the same since then. It's all on social media. All your major media outlets now use social media as much as anything, probably more now. And it's just going over to that area of news dissemination. So we have to keep up with that. We have to, in order to stay ahead of the narrative, we have to get the information out to the media as quickly as we can. It might not be very detailed at first, but we're going to let you know what we have and where it's at, and then we're going to update you as quickly as we can to keep disinformation and misinformation off of social media.
I was just going to say, that's the battle, right? Is, you know, people have always talked, there's always been rumor and gossip, and, you know, on the one hand, you didn't necessarily encounter it as much, but you know, social media gives everybody a newspaper, everybody a radio station, everybody a TV station,
right,
and multiple of them, you know, depending on your different platforms. And the result of that is sometimes very, very useful. And the result of that is sometimes extraordinarily counterproductive.
Yes.
Because, yes, let's just put it this way, not everybody should be trusted with their own newspaper or TV station or radio station. Not everybody is up to that task. So, yeah, back to this conversation about social media and, you know, just putting a newspaper power or a TV station, radio station's power in everybody's hands all the time, you find out that not everybody's really up to that task. And specifically when it comes to law enforcement stories, right? I mean, you guys have to, the information is as important as the actual facts, because the information shapes how the public reacts to what your officers are doing all the time, right?
Absolutely. We want to get the information out there quickly but accurately, and sometimes that's tough to do. And that's why the initial information we put out is not very detailed, because we simply don't have the numbers. We don't want to speculate. Mm-hmm. In this business, you do not speculate. We need to give out facts. That's what the public wants, and that's what they deserve, especially in the situation of involving kids. If something happens at a school or at a movie theater or at the mall, we need to get the information out quickly, but we've got to be accurate, because we don't want to cause any undue panic.
And also, in some cases, like, you know, recently with the school, turn out to be completely different,
right,
from what you initially thought. And if you put out, hey, we think it's this, people freak out, and it turns out, well, it wasn't that at all. And, you know,
right,
that, you know, we had a local example of that.
Yep.
That can be a problem. And sort of, you know, like, in that regard, we talked about criminals doing things that, you know, are sort of irrational or whatever. I think the fact that so many criminals video themselves and do live video and like to share and brag and provide, yeah, evidence, let's just say, in leads.
Yeah, social media has been an investigator's friend as well.
Yeah.
Stolen merchandise, video of the crime being committed.
Right.
They post things like that, and we certainly don't mind that at all. It helps us solve cases quickly.
One thing that I have been wanting to ask you for a while, and I've never had a chance to do it, and I'm just kind of curious about this. When you make an arrest, you're a law enforcement officer, you make an arrest, do you as a cop follow that case? Do you follow the trial? Do you pay? Because it takes years a lot of times for these cases to be disposed. Do you keep track of that? Do you keep track of it more if it's your own case as opposed to just like a general high-profile case? or do you kind of do your job, make your arrest, show up for the trial when you need to and deal with other stuff? Because, you know, who's got time for all that?
Well, it depends on the arrest. A misdemeanor shoplifting arrest, probably not. But a major arrest, something that got a lot of attention, something that may be very personal to the officer or the investigator, those are cases that they keep up with. Mm-hmm. They also want to know what happens to their cases in court to make sure they're presenting good, solid cases. They would like to see a high conviction rate. Sure. So they'll keep up for reasons like that on the big cases.
Okay. Mallory, I didn't necessarily say that you were going to be on the air, but I am curious, and you can feel free to decline, but you've been doing this for how long? You've been in training?
Just a couple of weeks now.
Okay. Tell me something that surprised you that you've learned in the last couple of weeks. Anything stand out that's interesting or different?
Probably not anything really different. I think I was surprised by how much, like, connection that, you know, Mr. Woods has here. You know, he talked about, and also at school that I'm learning is that, connection is key, and, making sure that you keep, your friends and also, like, coworkers close, because, you know, that is the kind of thing that will keep, like, take you so long. You know, he brought donuts today, but also he's here to, you know, listen to you and really answer to the public.
Brought us donuts. I know, I do things backwards.
But no, he's great. I mean, I really think the connection was what really, like, surprised me, because I'm like, you know, I've always seen that, like, you know, the news is always trying to make people look bad, and, you know, here in Pensacola I see the complete opposite, and it's definitely, like, eye-opening to me.
Yeah, it's the relationship between the news media in Pensacola and law enforcement is atypical. But in part, it's atypical because, you know, some of us have certain ideas about how this ought to go. And also because people like you, you know, go, and other PIOs go out of their way to really make that a more amicable relationship than exists in other places. And by the way, I know, Mike, you're a typical cop. You love to receive praise to your face. But, you know, I believe that you are, like, at the top of the PIO capability. And one of the things is because of how he maintains relationships, provides information, reaches out proactively, you know, always responsive. I will say that not everybody is, and you absolutely are. I mean, many are, but you are. There's nobody who's better. There are some who are nearly as good as or as good as, but nobody does it better. So I really appreciate that. I had a cop myth fly in and out of my head that it suddenly occurred to me that I was going to ask you about, and then... Oh, no, you mentioned it. It was the conviction rate. On TV, you always see cops portrayed as being graded on their conviction rate and caring about their clearance rate and, you know, fighting and squabbling over, this is an easy case to clear, I want it. This is a hard case, I'll never clear it, I don't want it. Is there any part of that that's accurate, or what parts of that might be true?
No, the cases are assigned to investigators, and it's their job to clear those cases.
You got to see his smirk. It's just like, oh, my God, these idiots.
No, that's... That's not how it works at all. The cases are assigned to the investigators, and they try to clear those cases, all those cases. And when they present them to a grand jury or they go to court, they are very interested in how they turn out, and they want good, solid cases. Nobody wants an investigator that's presenting cases that are constantly getting thrown out, or a patrol officer either. Every time he or she goes to court, so the incidents are getting thrown out. Nobody wants that either. So we want to present good, solid cases.
Are you – I mean, is there, like, you've got to clear 60% or you don't make the next rank? Is there anything along those lines?
No, I mean, if you might not last as an investigator very long if your cases are not being cleared and
gotcha.
Your conviction rate's low, but I've never heard of that at the Pensacola Police Department.
And you mentioned something a moment ago that I just want to amplify because I thought it was so good, is you follow your cases so that you can learn which ones are succeeding so that you can learn how to make better cases. Because if you don't know why cases make or fail, then you won't be able to properly gather evidence and decide which cases to proceed with or not. In order to not waste the court's time, for example, right? All of those things are factors.
Exactly, that's right.
Very good. Mallory Rivera in training for public information officer training, and Mike Wood, of course, the PIO for the Pensacola Police Department. Thank you so much for coming in today. Great to talk to you. I appreciate the work.
Thank you.